It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 469. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I got two great voicemails lined up. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. And we got the wiki. You can check out the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the past shows and the show notes and the audio to the shows. Great resource. Make sure to check that out. I have, again, another jam-packed show, some stories from the trenches we're going to start out with that I want to talk about. Then that's going to lead into two voicemails, which are responses to questions and problems that I was running into, like that laptop issue and the issue that I had with opening Word documents where you have to turn off the protection. So we're going to hear about that. I got great emails where some listeners have problems that we're going to get into, and then also follow-ups and responses to past shows. Now, last week was dedicated to getting things done. It was a short show, but I didn't cover any voicemail or email, so we want to get caught up on that. So what happened this week, I get a call from one of my financial advisors who has an office in Delaware, and their system is infected. One of the advisors' system is infected. And they have three other computers, and they're afraid that maybe the other ones might get infected. So one of the first things that I have them do is run CombiFix to clean up the infection so I could remote in. And what did I use to remote in? I used Instant House Call. And here's why. Not only did I have them go to my website and then download the client that you get when you purchase Instant House Call, you get a little landing page that you get to send everybody to. But Instant House Call, I was remoted in to all four computers. I was running Malwarebyte scans on all the computers. I ran the whole gambit of my junkware removal and all the utilities we talk about. And I literally had four monitors right around me here, and each one had an Instant House Call session on. That's the capability that you get when you sign up for an incredible remote control source. It has built-in tools that are the D7, or they have an auto repair, which is the remote D7 repair, where you can launch them to fix computers. You can have your client not only connect with you, but you can instantly start repairing them automatically. And you can try it free for 15 days by just clicking on the Instant House Call ad right on the left-hand side of my website at miketechshow.com. Right on the left-hand side, right at the top, click on that, and then fill in the information for your free 15-day trial and use the promo code MikeTechShow. Now, I've also been using Instant House Call in unattended mode for a new client in Chicago that I'm partnering with someone, and I'm helping him out with the server support. And over the weekend, I put Instant House Call on in unattended mode so I can easily connect in and start doing my assessments, and I'm ready to jump in to help support them and do all the repairs and everything that comes about. A couple weeks ago, I was helping a consultant, a listener consultant, that needed some advice on moving forward with a server migration. And I want to share with you one of the cool things that he did when he took over this account. It was old hardware that kept failing, running Small Business Server 2003. And to stabilize the environment, he used VMware and grabbed literally the entire setup of Small Business Server 2003, everything, made it virtual, and put it on a Windows 7 host. He has a nice, powerful box running Windows 7 Pro, and he's virtually running the Small Business Server 2003, and all the hardware problems went away because now it's all the virtual drivers. And he stabilized the environment. What a cool way. And I told him when he was done telling me this, as we started talking about where he's going to migrate from there next, I said, I'm sharing what you did with all the listeners. As you go in to a situation where maybe it's a new client and their environment's not stable and they're having hardware problems, but you don't have the time to make the software changes and to do a complete migration to new hardware, just P2V it. P2V is physical to virtual. Use the tools right within VMware and just move it. Rip it out of that old hardware, virtualize it, and you can run it on anything. That's a great, great tip to keep in our tool bag as an idea for stabilizing and getting an environment where they don't have the issues that they're experiencing right now. Maybe the hardware is too old. It's breaking down. It's having problems. Well, you eliminate that by virtualizing it and putting it on a stable hardware platform. I'm going to have a link to a website that came up in the pre-show a couple weeks ago. It's called Wix, W-I-X. I started playing with that in building a website. You have to do it. I started playing and designing, and I can't wait. I'm not finished yet with one of my designs. I'm like editing it every time I get a chance. And the editor is so cool for being able to pick great pictures and be able to almost create a beautiful slideshow of pictures for maybe the industry that you're representing. And the different layouts that they have for building your own website. And this is what I want to do for my mhsconsulting.net. I got to make it better because right now it's just a flat WordPress not being updated. And it's just some text with descriptions of my services. But it's so boring and so bad considering people make associations with, by the way, Wix is free. People make associations with the quality of your website and extrapolate that and say, ew, if it looks like that, what kind of a tech is he? And I think I'm the exact opposite. I think I'm a great tech, but I'm a lousy website designer because that's not my job. I don't know how to do websites. I never did and I never want to. I know the back end. I can solve the DNS. I could set up the servers and fix up the hosting and control everything, but when it comes to design, that's not me. I never got into HTML coding and never got into anything. That's why I run into problems with my simple WordPress stuff. I just don't have the abilities coding for websites. It's just, I'm not interested. I don't have the time and it's not my area of expertise. So anyway, check out Wix for helping you put a really, I think, dynamic website together. Ran into this issue with a client who is the owner of the business. This is a new client, and it's the owner of that business that has now actually two houses. He has a house, and then he has a side house that he uses for entertaining and for meetings and different things. And it's that building that he just got Verizon Fios, and he has Comcast coming in at the main house. But we have Fios in this secondary building, and he has, you know, I got the Wi-Fi, everything going. But there are members of the family that have Macs and that need the Macs backed up properly. So I had him buy the 3 terabyte Apple AirPort. After, if you use the default settings and you plug it in, and I don't know where I went wrong, but I had everything working, and then there was a moment the next day that everything stopped working, and the Apple AirPort, that DHCP started taking over and giving out IP addresses to the wrong network to everybody. You can't get to the Verizon router, and you can't get out to the internet. So it just messed everybody up. And I go in, and I realize, you know what? To make this device play properly with the rest of the environment, you have to make it a bridge. So that's my main tip out there. If you have an Apple AirPort and you're adding it into an existing network, bridge it, okay? Make it a bridge to the existing network. So this way it turns off its DHCP and it's just an extension. Now, what is an Apple AirPort? It's basically a base station that allows Mac users to use Time Machine and be able to back up their Macs wirelessly to this 3 terabyte device. It's just a big cylinder that's 3 terabytes, and it works great. That was my big tip for the Apple AirPort. Just make sure that you don't have double NATing going on and that extra DHCP. So now, the same client has, I kid you not, 12 systems in the house of various stages of age that were all once used as the central storage for backing up all of their photographs. Now, the wife is a professional photographer and takes pictures all over the world. And she has, I was going to say thousands, but I think it's in the hundreds of thousands, and it may be in the millions of photos across these 12 computers. And I wish you could see them, because they're all lined up off to the side here. I have all of these computers, and my job in between everything else over the next few weeks, I am going to take all of the data off every one of these systems, and most of them are just going to be thrown away. I'm going to take data off of them. Some, one of them's a server, another one's a NAS device, and they're just, their data is all over the place. I am going to have one silo, one external drive, and however big that has to be, I'll make it that size. I'm going to get a second one, and I'm going to duplicate it, and now he has one to put away that's a permanent backup of all those systems, and then another one that he can use, and we're going to put on a new server, and we're going to connect it. And by the way, that server is going to be a Mac server, and then I'm going to connect this drive to it, and now his wife will have access to all of the photos. We put remote access to that server, so no matter where she's at around the world, she'll have complete access to the millions of photographs. Here's what I need from the Mac experts out there. Money no object. What is the best program for managing millions of photos? Okay? I mean, I need the best Mac program that is out there. Now, I haven't done my due diligence and my research yet, but it's something I'm going to do. So I'd like to hear from my Mac experts out there, what is that the ultimate program that maybe professional photographers are using in the Mac world, or, you know, what is it? I would like to know. But it's got to be very robust. It's Thursday night, and those of you who have been following me with the on Tech Vets and with Carrie Holzman has been using this computer that he bought last October, or he would never buy a computer, but that he assembled, and he has been, it has been the focal point of all of his videos that are just incredible. I'll have a link to Carrie Holzman's channel in the show notes. And if you have not visited to see his videos, they are must for watching. And he was generous enough to donate that system for me to use for recording the Mike Tech shows and the future Tech Vets shows. That system is coming on Friday, tomorrow. In preparation for that, I'm going to be putting it right where my existing system is, but it's where I want to move my existing computer behind me under a table, which was filled with piles of manual folders of paper from all of my clients. Now, they're all labeled, they're all stacked, and I just had mountains of paper that needed to be organized and filed. So the other night, we were going to record Tech Vets, and Carrie had some throat issues, a little touch of laryngitis, and that's why we didn't record. I took advantage of that by going to Staples, buying some two-drawer-high filing cabinets, a refill for my P-Touch, some folders, and then some of the hanging folders. And my son Ryan and I proceeded to start organizing the office here and getting things together and moving files. Spent hours and hours, and I'm still not done, and I'm going to be doing that into tomorrow just to make room for all this hardware and what I have planned for my office. But one of the first things I had to do was get organized and have an assemblance of knowing where things are and be able to easily get to a client's file when I head out the door. I want to be able to go in, grab it, grab the manual file, and then head out. Now, a lot of times I don't need that. And yes, I have electronic versions of everything, but there's some things with my paper notes and just, I'm a note taker. So I go through tons of tablets of paper and I continuously take notes, and then I put them in the folders when I get home. They needed to be all filed properly, labeled properly. Then all the personal stuff for, like, you know, your home, your mortgage, insurance, yada, yada, everything. You just need a place. The system coming in and making room for it kind of forced that and forced my hand. So I was really glad. So I'm organizing everything. It's going to make for a better podcast. What? How could that be? Well, that's because having this extra hardware, I've got some plans on what I'm going to be doing that should make the audio and the video even better. Look forward to some tweaking coming ahead. Be on the lookout for that, and I think it'll be very noticeable as I start to implement it. Have some voicemails. First one is sort of two parts. It touches on two different topics. Give a listen.
Hey, Mike. Patrick in Springfield, Missouri. I'm a little behind, so, you know, this may not be applicable anymore. You may already have your answers, but just in case, so you had a laptop that would not work well wirelessly in an office, small four-person office, and it worked fine everywhere else. Well, there's an odd thing that I've run across in my part of the business. If someone lays their cell phone down right next to their laptop, the cell phone, even when you're not talking on it, is responding to polls from the towers in the area to let them know it's there. Well, when it responds, it's transmitting. The thing's just a little glorified walkie-talkie anyway, but it's transmitting, and that radio frequency transmission can interfere with the network connection of a laptop. And I've seen that many times over several years, so I'm sure that can happen. Of course, the solution is move the cell phone at least arm's reach away from the laptop. Another thing is hostage virus, the one that encrypts Word docs and things and says, hey, if you want it back, you got to send us this money. I haven't tried this yet, but it just occurred to me that under Windows 7, get an automatic backup system restore, every time you create a restore point, backs up not only system files, but also makes a copy of your other files on the computer, that like Word docs. So you can actually go into Windows Explorer and find the document you're have in question, and right-click it and choose an option to look at previous versions. So that may help if you have somebody that hasn't been doing regular backups. That may be one more spot to look for an emergency backup of a file. With any luck, these hostage virus guys don't encrypt the Windows versioning of files that you work on. That's it. Great show. Hope you have a good day. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for those tips. I always forget that you can right-click on a file and restore a previous version. That's something that I just can't get into my head to remember. So that's a great tip. And also, I think you're right about the phone and where you put the phone and what phone you have and what service you have, and depending on what building you're at. That is something I didn't explore. I should have removed his phone, because you figure his phone's with him wherever he moved the laptop in the building. So that's something I didn't try. Now, to finalize that story, we gave up trying to figure out why just at that location it wouldn't work. So he was already buying a new laptop, and the new laptop's in, and I'm about half set up. I have more software where he's got to bring in some software keys and some software on Monday, and I'm actually going to be bringing that laptop up to production quality, where then I can start now finally backing up everything from his old laptop and move it over. We have to be very careful. This is a man who lives with his laptop, and he literally commutes from New York to his office here. It's important that we get everything right and all the software in. And he is hardwired right now with his old laptop. We decided it's just not worth spending any more time. Some problems, we just won't find an answer, and we just move on. Now, that brings up, and I didn't plan on talking about this, but there were two, this is the same office. Remember there were two devices that I didn't have access to? Well, over the last couple weeks, one of the devices, the little D-Link router that I was afraid to reset, well, it died, and I had to put a MediaLink router in its place. So clearly, they didn't have any special settings there, and I was able to make that work. The other device, I'm not supposed to have access to. I did not know that with the phone system that's in place with their Comcast internet, this SonicWall is a owned and managed device by Comcast, and I'm not allowed to have access to it. I'm not supposed to, and if I want any changes, I must deal with Comcast. I have a lot of Comcast businesses with business internet and business phone, and I had never seen them manage a firewall behind someone's Comcast router. I have never seen that, at least in this area. That was new to me, and learning that they own that, I don't need access to it. That's where the phone and the internet are split, and that's where the voice quality of service is managed. So I understand. So we thought there was some other vendor in the past that supplied that, and we were trying to get access. Oh, well, but at least I haven't answered everything. Give a listen to the second voicemail.
Hey, Mike, this is Robert from down in Charleston, South Carolina. I just wanted to kind of, I know you've probably gotten the answer to this, but I just wanted to throw in there, in case you haven't, the ability to edit Word documents upon downloading without having to go through the, you know, enable editing or whatever. If you open up Word or Outlook or whatever you're trying to, whatever program it is, if you go to File Options Trust Center, and then you go to Trust Center Settings, and there is a Protected View tab, and then you can uncheck the Enable Protected View from all those, and that should let you edit it right after you download it. I might even also, you might even want to go to File Block Settings and open behaviors for selected file types near the bottom. You can adjust those as you see fit. Hope this helps, and thank you for such a great work and a good, awesome community that's been built around the Mike Tech Show. And, you know, all your listeners who, you know, help out, it's incredible. Thank you so much, and hope this helps. Bye.
Thank you for that tip, and I decided to play that voicemail as opposed to all of the email that I received with the same tip. Thank you. I don't know why, but it's just something that eluded me. And when I emailed that right after the show, actually, some listeners in the chat actually emailed me that tip on how to edit that in Word. And it's very, very, very simple. When you go into Word, just remember to go to File, Options, and then Trust Center. And then in the Trust Center, you just click Trust Center Settings. Then you go to Protected View, and then just uncheck everything in the Protected View. And that's what I did, and it makes it so much easier. And once you check all them, or should I say uncheck that Protected View, you now, I believe, get rid of one more annoyance within Word and Excel and the Office Suite. So thank you very much for that, and everybody who wrote in with those with the suggestion. Let's get to email. This is from Tim, and it's Windows 8 file system change. Hello, Mike. Thank you so much for your podcast. It is the best out there. What changed in the file system of Windows 8? I took the hard drive out of a Windows 8 machine and put it into a different Windows 8 machine as a second drive. And I copied a bunch of files to a folder that was already there to save time. When I put it back into the original Windows 8 machine and booted up on it, Windows 8 did a hard drive check when it started. I guess it knew something was different. When I looked for the files that I copied to the hard drive, they were gone. Apparently, Windows 8 just removes all references to any files that were not created by it. Oh, that just doesn't sound right. Windows 8 must have a hard drive index or journal that tells it to delete anything that it did not create. I tried creating a separate partition to copy the files to, but the same thing happened. All copied files were deleted. Maybe it's a security feature in Windows 8. Do you know what's happening here? No. And this is from Tim from Oceanside, California. I've never heard of this, but I have not taken a drive that's got Windows 8 and moved it from one computer to another. I have not done that. Has anyone heard of this? Does anybody know what's going on? Let me know. This is from David. Hey, Mike. I love the Mike Tech Show. I have two quick questions. Do you use AdBlock Plus? I want to use this on client computers, but I hear now that AdBlock Plus do allow certain ads to go through. Also, have you tried OpenDNS TrueCrypt? I think OpenDNS would be enough, but this looks like it adds an extra layer of protection. I provided a link below. Thanks, and keep up the great work. I don't block ads, and it's very interesting. If I run into a site that's got just way too many ads, I never go back there again. But ads are what supports the content on sites. Like, I have a couple innocent ads. They're not intrusive, but they help support my show. Don't block them, or you're going to end up paying for that content. So I'm torn between blocking ads and not. If they're real obnoxious and they're all over the place, you know what? Don't go back to that website. I don't use the ad blocker. Getting back to this DNS crypt, I have never heard of this, but it looks like it's a combination of TrueCrypt and OpenDNS as an extra layer of security. And check this out. If anybody has absolutely used this and wants to do a review, please email me, send me a voicemail, and I'll play it on the show. This is from Robert. Love the show. Dear Mike, I love your show, and also you and Carrie Holzman do a great job on Tech Vets. It is nice to know there are guys out there like you who are willing to take the time to educate people on computers and how to run a business. I am kind of a late bloomer in the IT field. I have an CompTIA A+, Network Plus, Security Plus, and MCTS 7680 Windows 7 certifications. I'm in my late 40s. I live in Wichita, Kansas. I have a technical diploma in IT from a local technical school. I have been in the retail industry for 25 plus years and have been working with computers, helping family, friends, and coworkers for 20 years. I decided to go to technical school and I graduated in 2011. I left a job in a local grocery store I had worked for 23 years and went to work for a company who has a call center here in Wichita. I did not do so well and got let go. So I had to go back to the company I worked for prior. I would like to start my own business out of my home, repairing and custom building computers. I believe my working in the retail industry, dealing with customers on a day-to-day basis, would be a great asset to me. A few questions that I have are as follows. Should I get a business license or should I get the business first and then get the license? Start doing your business first, but it depends where you're at. When I was in Philadelphia, I had to have what they call a business use license to do a business out of my house. And there was a fee, and it was like $300 or something that I had to spend to the city of Philadelphia to have that business use license. And you got to pay that every year. Now that I'm outside of the Philadelphia area, there are local taxes and things for having a business out of your house. So you got to check your township and ask, is there a business use, business privilege tax, some kind of business license that you need to practice in the city that you live in and that you're working? I can't answer that based on where you're at. So you have to investigate that. The license is only $35 per year. Well, you have to get that. That's the law. So for you to practice, should I consider getting some kind of liability insurance just in case of a problem? Wait until someone requires the insurance. You don't even know if you're going to make a go of this. Before you go spend the money on liability insurance, wait. Start your business. Start getting clients. Start doing the work. Wait until it becomes an issue where it's required. Now, if you are working out of your house and you have clients coming to visit you and they're walking in your house, I would get the business insurance to cover them just from a liability. What if they fall? What if they get hurt? And you're operating a business out of your house. Your home insurance may not cover that. You need to call your insurance company and ask only if you got people coming to visit. They may require some kind of a rider or some kind of additional business coverage. That you just need for common sense just to protect yourself because you got strangers possibly coming to your house and they could get hurt. Something could happen. Accidents happen. I wouldn't go buy it until it's required. Now, for me, if you've been listening to Tech Vets, you've heard me talk about on two different occasions, I've had to provide proof of my business insurance or I wasn't getting the job. So my agent had a fax. My biggest client right now required me to be covered or I wasn't walking in the door. Wait until it's required. What type of hardware, software do I need to get, etc.? Any other tips you can give me would be a real help. Go back and listen to all the Tech Vets because there's some great stuff for everything that you need for starting your business. Hardware, software, you need a good set of basic tools depending on what you're doing for computers. I mean, it's hard to say. I don't know what type of consulting you're going to be doing or what type of repairs. If you're going to be doing computer repairs, well, you better have all the testing equipment and everything you need to be able to repair a computer. I don't repair, per se, hardware. So I have lots of CDs, DVDs, and bootable USB sticks that have different utilities on it. Certainly, almost every program you've heard me talk about here and link to in the show, for cleaning systems from a software standpoint, you want to maintain current copies of all that software on the USB sticks. That's very important. I'd begin there and have some basic tools. Eventually, you're going to have to start carrying, like me, I carry extra backup drives, extra, you know, 1 terabyte passport drives, because I recommend them to my clients to use as backups. I carry a spare video card. I carry spare internal hard drives. My car in the back looks like a little computer store when I go to clients, because I want to have a spare keyboard, spare mouse. And I make sure some of them are brand new, so if I need it, I sell it right on the spot. What are the clients that you're going to be working on? What will they need? Don't run out and start buying at one of everything. Wait and get a feel for what common things that you need, and then buy them. And don't buy a lot. Buy one or two, and when you sell them and you need to, then you go replace them. Keep me posted. I want to know how you're making out and how the working for yourself and how your business is going. This is from Nigel, Junkware. Hi, Mike. I would just like to add my thumbs up regarding the toolbar and junkware removal tools your ever-resourceful listeners came up with. My PC has been having intermittent stability and performance issues for a long time. The normal malware scans never picked up anything significant, but since cleaning out the toolbars and junkware, it is much more stable and running a lot faster. Once again, you saved the day. Thanks. Nigel from Australia. Here's a test for everybody. My oldest son and I were talking about this. If you click on your browser and it takes more than 2 seconds to appear on the screen, then you need cleaning. We actually measured and started testing what it takes. When I click on Firefox or Chrome, it launches in 2 seconds. And if your browser is not launching that fast, then you need to start looking at some tools. Just some food for thought there. This is from John, and he's responding to me asking for syncing software for syncing the contacts and the calendars for my one client. He's got a link here for GSyncIt 3. And thank you, John, for that. And that's going to be in the show notes. And also, Mark Cobb. Mark sent a link to GSyncIt. Thank you very much. This is from Josh. Interesting hardware failure for you. Hi, Mike. I sent this to both show addresses because I thought you might want to share it on both shows. Had an interesting problem to solve that a coworker at my day job asked me to help him with. He had a Dell OptiPlex 390 that would post and start to boot into Windows 7. But after the animated starting Windows screen, you could see the mouse cursor come on the black screen. Then the whole screen would go black and nothing else would happen. The system would never boot up to the blue welcome screen. He tried re-imaging the system. Dell replaced the motherboard, swapped monitors, all with no luck. He got me in on it and we swapped power supplies and RAM, no luck. Even tried other RAM slots. I had thought maybe power supply or CPU. But when I have seen a bad CPU, the system doesn't even post. So I first ruled that out. After all else failed, I swapped the CPU chips, and that did the trick. The problem followed the chip to the other machine. Just wanted to share this, as I have never seen a CPU fail this way. It posted fine, would even go into the BIOS and into Windows safe mode, but not boot into normal mode. Has to be something with the GPU part of the core i5 chip, but a bad chip nonetheless. Love the shows and thought I'd share. Thank you, Josh. That's a great story. Thank you. This is Server Admin Password Reset. Hi, Mike. I listen to all of your shows while in the car. Often I think to myself, I'm going to email or call about topics you discuss. I usually forget when I get into the office. However, recently you mentioned something on your shows about maybe needing to reset the domain admin password on a server. Matt over at Podnuts Pro discussed this issue a while back on one of their episodes. This link is about the episode, and I'll put that in the show notes. Also, I know you're extremely busy and are at the point of being spread too thin. Have you ever heard of CS Hotline? It's owned by Dan Hand, president of ACRBO, which you really should join, and may be a good way to generate revenue off many of your smaller client issues that can be done remotely. I've been using it for a few months with some pretty good success. Viruses often aren't possible due to systems being too locked down for the customer to even get online. But if it is a simple tune-up, basic Outlook issue, or maybe other simple things that you don't have time to work on, you can send them your personal link to CS Hotline and let Jamie, Dan, or one of their other techs repair the issue for your customer as if they are an employee of MHS Consulting. Just a thought that may keep some of the smaller issues off your plate, but not turn away business or have it slip through the cracks. You know what, Kevin? Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate this. This is from Mark, and this is a question about backing up, and it's a SyncBack Pro old file version solution. Hi, Mike. Great show. Thanks a ton for all of your great tech help. I am looking for a backup solution for the server at my work. I downloaded SyncBack Pro, and I'm testing the 30-day trial. It seems like a good solution for myself at home, but at work, we need the capability to revert to an older version of a file if it is changed. Is it possible to use SyncBack to revert to a 10-day-old file if we're going nightly backups of about 20 terabytes and our file changes every day? It is possible to do this with Acronis, but Acronis does not work on our system because the file names are too long and hangs up while doing backups. Thanks again, Mark. I asked Mark, what is the operating system of the server? And it is Small Business Server 2008, I believe. Mark, there's only one backup solution the minute I hear Small Business Server, and that is StorageCraft's Shadow Protect for Small Business Server. You're going to shell out $495, but because you have a server, you absolutely have to use it. You could even just do one full backup a week and do incrementals every single day. So this way you can go back to any version you want of a file. You could even do like one full backup a month and do incrementals for 29 days. It's easy to mount a backup. Whatever backup schedule you decide, the backup's fast, it's efficient, and you just right-click on the backup and you mount it. It becomes a drive letter when you can pull any file you want. And if you have a backup every night, that's your versioning. And you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about the size because incrementals are only the changes. So if this file changed 20 times and you have 20 backups, you can go to any version. This software just flat out works, and I can't recommend anything else because that's what I use for all of my small business server clients. And they are not a sponsor of the show. But yeah, I got to recommend a product that works, and you know that's all I'm going to do and anything I recommend. This is from Robert, and it's creating a Windows 7 install media on a flash drive using just the disk part, and he has a documentation attached that I'm going to put in the show notes. I want to thank Robert for sending that. I want to thank everybody for this past month, for July, for your incredible use of my Amazon link, and that's amazon.mikenation.net. July was the best month of 2013 already. So I want to thank you very much. And if you buy anything from Amazon, use my link, bookmark it, share it, send it to family, friends, anybody that you come across that you know is purchasing from Amazon. And again, that's amazon.mikenation.net. That makes a great difference. It really helps support the show. Last Thursday, I was fortunate enough to finally meet Liz Longley. I met her before the show and after the show. It was a great concert. And I was able to obtain her new CD, which is not even released yet. And she closed her concert with this song. And it is a cover song from Queen. I love the group Queen. And you know I love playing cover songs. This is a totally different take. Crazy Little Thing Called Love. This is Liz Longley's take. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
This thing called love, I just can't handle it. This thing called love, I must get around to it. I'm not ready. Crazy little thing called love. This thing called love, it cries in a cradle all night. It swings, it jives, it shakes like a jellyfish. I kinda like. Crazy little thing called love. There goes my baby. He knows how to rock and roll. He drives me crazy. Gives me hot and cold fever. Leaves me in a cool sweat. I've got to be cool. Relax. Get hit.
That is Liz Longley and her self-titled CD, which hopefully will be out soon. I think they're redoing the artwork and for the release that they have. I think they're making some changes, and then they're going to be releasing it again. Well, it's not really officially released, but they have it. She has it available to buy for her tour. Before or after the show, you can buy the CD. That's Crazy Little Thing Called Love, and she closed the concert with that. It was great. I had a tremendous time, and it was great meeting her. She's just what an incredible voice, and she's from the area. And I've been playing her music, and I reminded her. She remembered recording the birthday message to me where she sang happy birthday. Barbara Citizen X was responsible for putting a great birthday audio file from a lot of my listeners and everybody that contributed, and Liz actually sang happy birthday. She got her to do that. That was amazing. She got Rob Coslow to play happy birthday on the piano for me. And that's the intro and outro music you hear. That was tremendous. And she remembered that. And that was very cool. I also talked about some of the first songs that I played on the Mike Tech Show 8 years ago. And she just couldn't believe it. One of her first songs called Naked Trees I played when she was, I think, like 14 or something when I played that. She's doing great. Look forward to that new CD when it comes out. But I'll have a link to her website where you can get all of her great music. That's it. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed and listening to the podcast. I really appreciate it. make sure to visit my affiliate links. If you need Malwarebytes Pro, use my link, Amazon. And, of course, please support the sponsor, Instant House Call. And when you click on that, make sure to use Mike Tech Show for the promo code, and you get 15 days free. That's it. Actually, there's no show next week. I will talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.